Good morning. Welcome into First Take. Hope everyone had a nice weekend. Good to have the crew back here with us. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, Paul Feinbaum here with us as well. And we're going to begin with the major story of the day. There has been a complete 180 college football. We're tracking all of it. Let's get right into it here, gentlemen. Commissioners of the Power Five conferences held an emergency meeting Sunday amid growing concern that the upcoming football season and other fall sports can't be played because of the coronavirus pandemic. The commissioners talked about trying to collaborate if their respective presidents do decide to cancel or postpone fall sports. Meanwhile, some of the biggest stars in college football put out a statement released on social media just before midnight on Sunday, shared by dozens of college players. The group asked for uniform health and safety protocols for dealing with the pandemic and laid out their intentions to form a college football players association in the near future. The statement also said players should have the chance to opt out of the upcoming season, and they should be guaranteed another year of eligibility whether they play this season or not. Max, let's get to this about face. I mean, Wednesday of last week, we were releasing college schedules, and now we're on the brink of cancellation here. Paul, you are part of those conversations. Max, what should college football do at this point? Do they cancel the season, or do they postpone until the spring?
I think they're going to wind up postponing. They probably, at this point, should cancel. But I understand the desire to not make a decision that you can't undo until the 11th hour. You want to wait until the last possible second. Why cancel if you don't absolutely have to in case things change? There are vaccines and multiple vaccines in stage three. Maybe they can scale up in time. Maybe it can happen in the spring. But as Sean Doolittle, the relief pitcher for the Nationals, said, and I'm paraphrasing, sports is like a reward for a healthy society. We haven't done the things necessary to crush the curve. And so probably under these conditions, we shouldn't be playing a lot of sport, particularly tackle football, particularly at the collegiate level. But what's weird is that I don't want to sound like the adult in the room, because from the beginning, I want them to try if at all possible. But even that attempt may be irresponsible, to have that many people close to each other with a point that they're tackling each other and their students. You know, when it remains to be seen for how long universities will even remain open this fall. So I understand why they want to push it back. But once again, the people who are in charge in college football are made to look bad by the kids. Like this pretense that they're student athletes and we're educators and this is a great opportunity. I mean, I don't, for the billionth time, the millionth person has now said this on TV, what I'm about to say. But it's always been and is, continues to be about the money. And it's so nakedly, like the truth is so naked at this point that it's the kids, it's the students who have to say, wait a minute. Hashtag we want to play too. Like we all want to play. So they've worked out the student, different student organizations. We've worked that out. We all want to play, but can we all get on the same page? Can there at least be uniform safety protocols and things like that? And the adults at this point look so bad and so naked in their avarice, in their greed, that at the very least, it seems to me, they will be forced to postpone till the spring. But I suspect ultimately they're going to have to cancel anyway.
Max, this all started in the Big Ten for a good reason. The Big Ten has had a lot of issues and they're being transparent. At least six of the programs have at least had a temporary pause. So the conversation about, well, what's going to happen when you start having football games, it's already happening. It's happening across the country. Players are getting infected at alarming rates. Some are being transparent, some are not. But the Big Ten is clearly leading this. They want to cancel, and there's every reason to believe the Big Ten will cancel probably by tomorrow. In the Big Ten, you have two presidents who are medical doctors. One's an immunologist, the other's an epidemiologist. I have a feeling those voices have been heard, as opposed to the president at wherever who has his PhD in English literature at Brown. So that matters a lot. What also matters is that no one has been or will continue to be on the same page in college athletics. I know it's a tired, worn out argument that the structure is dysfunctional, but it is, and it's really coming back to haunt the sport. You have these five conferences, the Power Five. They are not being collaborative. Right now, you have the Big Ten and probably the Pac-12 who are going to say, we're done. And it's a free-for-all for the other three, as if three of the five could make this work. The college football playoff is built on all five conferences. So I talked to a source today in the SEC, and the person told me, we're still planning on playing. Remember, the SEC Friday night issued part of its schedule, the ACC Thursday, and the Big Ten the day before. So there are so many mixed signals. Here's a schedule, we're starting to play, and now we're thinking about canceling. It's utterly unimaginable how bad this sport looks, how dysfunctional it is, but they're really getting what they deserve. There has not been any leadership from the top. There has not been any collaboration. And now, a week ago, I was sitting here with you guys talking about, well, the Pac-12 players are going to protest. Now everyone's sending out tweets that we want to play. Which one is it, Stephen A.?
Well, I'll tell you what it should be. The college football season should be canceled. It should be canceled today. And I don't take any pleasure in saying that. You know that I've spoken at Alabama, I've spoken at Clemson, I've spoken at various universities throughout the last year. Paul, you know what I do. At the end of the day, I'm a staunch supporter of moving forward, recognizing the seriousness of a situation, but understanding the economic impact. And religiously, I've been of the position that you move full steam ahead. You just exhaust safety protocols. That all goes out the window with college football, because college football is inept. It's incompetent. It's devoid of leadership, damn near morals, as far as I'm concerned. And they're getting exactly what they deserve. I predict, Paul Feinbaum and Max Kellerman, that because of what we're witnessing transpire before our very eyes right now, you will ultimately see some kind of student athlete association. You will see representation received on the part of student athletes in the future. Because when you are a sport of this magnitude, raking in hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, and you don't have one definitive leader to lean on that everyone has to answer to, that has some sense of organization and structure, that is definitely looking out for the student athlete, when you don't have that going on, and they're not getting paid, you've got yourself a problem. One of the things that I brought up, Paul, on a side note, to some degree last week, was this. When you're talking about college football, could college football be played if students were on campus? The incentive would be yes for the universities. Why? Because employee versus non-employee status doesn't come into the equation so much. You operate business as usual, and you're able to get away with it because the students are on the campus along with the student athletes. But if you're not going to have students on campus, let's say they go all virtual, for example, at a lot of these institutions, then the student athletes who show up, their employment status is enhanced. As a result, you don't get to call them amateurs. You don't get to rob them and screw them over like you've been doing for decades.
Unionize.
And to me, that's something that the NCAA is paying attention to right now. So in the end, what it comes down to is this. Mark Emmett, don't get me started with him. Paul, you've gotten on him big time. You've excoriated him. He's deserved every bit of it. If not more, he comes across as inept and incompetent. The leadership with the NCAA, it's an absolute embarrassment. And as far as I'm concerned, why expose a student athlete to that? We talk about safety protocols and all of this other stuff. It's not good enough. In some instances, with pro leagues who are organized and are making money and are incentivized to do right by these guys. So imagine what college football is doing at this particular moment in time. It's a damn shame. It's an embarrassment. And as far as I'm concerned, the way for the NCAA, in terms of football, the NCAA period, to get its comeuppance, long overdue, by the way, is for the cancellation of the football season to take place so we never have to deal with these incompetent, amoral people again when it comes to the student athlete I'm talking about.
Paul,
I don't know how they are personally in terms of morals, but in terms of the student athletes, I consider them damn near immoral.
Paul, I have a question. We've seen in our broader society, for lack of a better word, the pandemic lay bare some issues that have led to cultural changes, and we'll see if eventually not structural changes in terms of the way we lead our lives. And I'm thinking about Black Lives Matter and some other stuff, too, that we've seen that the pandemic has brought out. When I look at college football, do you think there's going to be a lasting equivalent? Although we'll see if these cultural changes are lasting and if they're structural changes. But will there be changes to the NCAA, to the way college football is organized as a result of the pandemic and these kind of issues it's laying bare. Stephen A. Alluded to some of them, like a players' union, et cetera, that kind of stuff.
Totally. This is the single most important moment in the history of college football. I don't think when the dust settles, whenever that is, it is going to be recognizable. This reminds me a little bit of what happened with the Olympic movement in the 70s when players just finally said, why aren't we getting paid when athletes around the world, whether it's in East Germany or Russia or everyone else, are on the state payroll. So I think that is going to change. I think the structure of the NCAA will be ripped to shreds, and bravo, Stephen A., you're 100% correct. It's been archaic for and antediluvian for way too long. The players really scare everyone right now. One person told me inside the bubble yesterday that as bad as COVID is, and we all know, the idea that players are demanding to be heard scares them equally as much, because in spite of the lip service from everyone inside intercollegiate athletics, oh, we care so much about the player, we want to sit down and listen, have thoughtful conversations, we all know that's total BS. They only do that for
Molly,
show. They're not happy with what's going on social media right now.
The closing remark is this. This is the greatest opportunity the student athlete in collegiate sports has ever had to have to acquire representation. Everybody's watching, and we've seen the incompetence of leadership with the NCAA and how fragmented they are. And the bottom line is they've never had a greater opportunity to have representation than right now.
No question. They're using their voice, and obviously we all know their strength and numbers. I'll leave you with this. The average Power 5 school, according to USA Today, will lose $78 million. And, guys, as we heard, Adam Schefter was on Get Up. You know, the NFL is eyeing that Saturday spot, especially primetime, to have games. Wouldn't be shocked if that happens. Paul, thank you so much for being with us. We will continue to have much more on this story throughout the day.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take pod. Have a fabulous day.
Plenty of good NBA this weekend. Dame Lillard dropped 51 last night on the Sixers after dealing with the Clippers clapping at him Saturday after he missed a pair of clutch free throws in the Trailblazers' loss to the Clippers. Patrick Beverley, Paul George let Lillard hear about it. Then Dame was like, y'all must have forgot. I sent you both home. Then you teamed up in with Kawhi as well. Take a listen to this.
Asking me about Patrick Beverley, who I sent him home before at the end of a game. Paul George just got sent home by me last year in the playoffs. So they know that the reason they're reacting like that is because of what they expect from me, which is a sign of respect. And it just shows what I've done at a high clip more times than not. So I'm not offended by it. If anything, it should just tell you how much it hurt them to go through what I put them through in those situations previously.
The chirping continued via Instagram with Paul George posting, and you're getting sent home this year. Pat Beverley adding, Cancun on three. Dame followed up with, keep switching teams. running from the grind, you boys is chumps. On that note, we bring in NBA champion Kendrick Perkins. Max is loving all of it. Stephen A., talk to me. Who's under more pressure? Is it PG or would you say it's Dame?
Oh, it's definitely Paul George. Make no mistake about it. And let me say this, okay? Paul George is a star. And Patrick Beverley is one of my favorite players and favorite people in the world. Don't mess with Dame. Don't mess with Dame Dollar. He's not the one. This brother on many, many occasions has stepped up in big moments and he has closed. This brother has carried this Portland Trailblazers franchise and has been the face of the franchise. And oh, by the way, you know, not only is he getting paid, not only is he a star averaging better than 25, 26, sometimes 27 to 28 a game, this is also a guy that doesn't get enough credit for his community service, his philanthropy, the fact that he is a guy that is socially conscious, never gets in any kind of trouble or whatever. This dude is worthy of being the face of a franchise. And by the way, Max, you know his rap game. Come on now. The brother's special, all right, in a multitude of ways. Having said all of that, none of that is the reason why Paul George is under more pressure. Paul George is under more pressure because, A, Paul George hasn't been out of the first round since 2014. I don't think anybody remembers. He hasn't been out of the first round since 2014. Now, obviously, he had that nasty injury in the summer games or what have you. He had to come back from that. But the last couple of years in Indiana, the last couple of years in OKC, before he arrived with the Clippers, he ain't been out of the first round. Then now you have a situation where he's that other star, the secondary star on the Los Angeles Clippers, a team that's widely favorite to win the championship. And we all know that if Paul George does the kind of things that he's capable of doing, the Clippers should win the chip. We all know this. And so when you have those kind of expectations on your plate, but you haven't been out of the first round in 6 years, and Dame Dollar is fresh off a trip to the conference finals, all right? We got to look at Paul George and say, in terms of the specific question, who's under the most pressure? I know Dame's getting his money, $250 million and all of this other stuff. I get all of that. But the brother's the face of the franchise. He's carried them on his shoulders for years. He's fresh off a trip to the conference finals. And he doesn't have the expectations this year that Paul George and the Clippers have. And I definitely think because of it, Paul George is under more pressure than him.
Damian Lillard is under more pressure. They're both under a lot of pressure. But Damian Lillard is clearly under more. First of all, keep running from the grind. Like, Lillard is everything you want in a franchise player. Staying up in Portland saying, no, I'm not going to join anyone. I'm going to do it right here. And what did we say back then? Stephen A., he should go here, he should go there. Really, two things had to happen because he was playing in Portland. One, Nurkic had to continue to improve. His trajectory had to take him past just a useful big into, like, a really good player. And it is looking like that has happened. He's, like, picked up where he left off, and he's trending in the right direction. And then the other thing is he needed another guy, not just CJ, another guy who he could rely on. And it looks like he's gotten that in Carmelo. He's got the things that we thought he needed if he was going to stay. Stephen A., to quote another rapper you may have heard of, in terms of Paul George going and Damian Lillard, don't bark up that tree. That tree will fall on you. I don't know why your advisors ain't forewarned you. Do not play with Damian Lillard. He's not the one. And we all smelled it on him from the beginning. That's why any failures he ever had in the playoffs, you're like, we didn't think Damian Lillard was that cat. We thought he was that dude to come up big. And that's the point. He has raised his already formidable game to MVP levels right now. He is putting on a show in winning efforts. Lillard is special, and he's showing it. Sometimes a guy who does not have the same overall game, like on defense or whatever, can elevate his game to an extent that it surpasses a much more well-rounded guy, like a Paul George. That's what Damian Lillard has done. He is the man on his team. He has the things we thought he needed, and the attention is squarely on him. Paul George, as great as he is second fiddle on his team. The pressure is more on Damian Lillard.
Max, 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 man, why do every time I come on here, you are so wrong, man. It's no pressure on Damian Lillard. How is it pressure on Dame Lillard? He's been playing this whole season with a team that's been injured, without Nurkic, without Zach Collins, and he's still keeping the Portland Trailblazers relevant. Anymore. He's arguably having one of the best seasons of his career. He's arguably in the top five conversation, might be one of the best point guards in the NBA. He's the second best scorer in the league in today's game. Max, he's the most clutch guy probably in today's game.
So there's more pressure on him.
If you want to talk about clutch, to your point. But no, it's not, man. There's not any pressure on Dame Dollar this year. He played with an injured roster. He wasn't even supposed to be here. He's fighting for the eighth spot. The pressure is on Paul George, right? You got the Clippers picked to win the championship, don't you? The reason that you have them picked to win the championship is one, because of Kawhi Leonard, and two, because of Paul George. We're talking about arguably one of the top five duos in the league. And I'm going back to Stephen A. Smith when he said the first part of it, Paul George has a history of disappearing in the playoffs. Now, I can recall last year when Dame Dollar sent him home. Yes, I know he was battling with injuries. But think about the year before that against the Utah Jazz when he was with Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook in the crucial closeout game goes in there and dropped 46 points. And what do Paul George do? He delivered 5 points. On 2 of 16 shooting. The pressure is on Paul George. The Clippers are championship or bust. We know what we're going to get out of Kawhi Leonard Jordan, but we don't know what we're going to get out of Paul George. So the pressure is on Paul George, your team, your pick that you got to win the championship. That's who the pressure is on, not Damian Lillard.
I appreciate the point that you both hit on, which I think is true. Paul George has to rise to the occasion. And right now, insofar as he has a reputation that way, not set in stone, but it's like, we've seen the opposite happen. And insofar as Lillard has a reputation, it's that he's played bigger. That's a true point. They both have pressure on them. And if you want to argue also, which you both did, the Clippers' expectations are higher. I agree with that too. But that's not just because of Paul George. It's primarily because of Kawhi. Then Paul George, and then the fact that this team, already last year, the majority of which is still together, won 48 games, and they have a great coach, right? That's why the pressure's on everyone on the Clippers. Paul George secondarily behind Kawhi. Well, but Damian Lillard is the man. People are expecting them to make the playoffs. And by the way, if I asked you guys right now, are the Blazers live against the Lakers in the first round if they make the playoffs? You're both going to tell me yes. On. Don't tell me the pressure's not on Lillard.
Well, first of all, if you're going to disagree with us, don't spend 2 minutes agreeing with us before you get to your point, because that deflates your argument, number two, and more importantly, I'm just telling you, number two, and more importantly, when you talk about Kawhi Leonard, I'm going to tell you why there's more pressure on Paul George. And by the way, Kendrick, I didn't say that Paul George, quote unquote, disappears in the postseason. Last 4 years, he's averaged 28 twice, 27 another time, 24 another time. So I'm not going to say he disappears, but all I'm saying to you is this. In the end, Max, when you talk about Paul George, you bring up Kawhi Leonard. Here's what you miss. The fact that Kawhi Leonard was in Toronto and won the title with Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet and Serge Ibaka and those boys. Well, why can't you win it with Paul George? Because then you're going to look at Paul George and say, wait a minute, this brother delivered the chip. With those dudes, even though we respect those dudes, we know Siakam's a star. We know Kyle Lowry's a veteran. Van Vliet and those boys can play. Much respect to them. But what I'm saying is if we see Kawhi Leonard win the chip with those guys, and then you go to L.A. and Paul George is your dude. And, oh, by the way, Kawhi asked for him. He didn't just ask the Clippers for him. He wanted the Toronto Raptors to get rid of Siakam so they could bring Paul George, and it was Masai Ujiri who said no. And then you end up with the Clippers, okay? So if you went through all of that to get Paul George, and then Paul George can't deliver for you come postseason time, what you think we gonna remember? Of course there's more pressure on Paul George.
Go ahead, Perk, and then I got both of you. Go ahead, Perk.
Absolutely, and Stephen A. And no, you don't. And Stephen A., to your point, I didn't say you said Paul George disappeared in the playoffs. I said that. because in the big moments, he don't come up big for what they need. I said that, not you, my brother, but Max, you're all over the place. I mean, you're confusing me because you're agreeing with me and me and Stephen A, then you're not. I don't know, you know, it's typical you. It's typical you because you're all over the place.
Yes.
You, first of all,
that
the,
is I'm in one place. It just feels like you're surrounded.
To be at the bubble. All right? No. The Portland Trailblazers are not even supposed to be at the bubble, right? If you was just to pick the top 16 teams, but luckily they gave Portland a chance. And right now, Dame Dollar is delivering down there. He's clutch. He's carrying them. And not only the thing that I love about Dame Dollar is that he talks his noise and he backs it up. It's no backpedaling with him. The other night when him and Paul George got into that little social media beef, all of a sudden Paul George wanted to go to his Instagram and start backpedaling and talking about this list of, you know, his injury history and stuff like that. Nah, Dame Dollar ain't do none of that. You know what Dame Dollar did? He came out and he took it out on Philly the next night and gave him a 51-piece wing dinner from Magic City. Might I say. But at the end of the day, Max, the pressure's on Paul George. When you talk about contenders.
Lemon pepper.
When you talk about contenders, right? You got the Clippers. You got the Clippers to win the championship. Paul George has to be that certified rival.
It's not
like Pascal Siakam was last year to Kawhi Leonard. So the pressure is on.
Well, first of all,
Paul
let's see how
George.
Toronto does in these playoffs. Because Toronto looks very, very live right now. Before you go, you know, say, well,
they
look, he left that team. That team may be better. I'm in one place. Stay beating both of you at the same time with one hand tied
That's
behind
not true.
My back.
You're never in one
you
place,
guys
man.
Are not
That's
making
not true. You're never in one place.
That aren't true.
You're never in one place.
That's the point.
You all
not,
over the place again.
I know it feels that way.
Never in
I know
one
it
place.
Feels that way to you. You're not surrounded. Believe me, they're just one of me. It just feels that way sometimes in an argument. The bottom line is, everything you're saying about Paul George is true. It's not that there's no pressure. It's that there's more pressure on the other guy because the other guy is the man. There's always more pressure on the man. Lillard is a bigger star. He's the number one guy on his team. That's not the case for Paul George. And right now, guys like you, both of you, if the postseason started and the Blazers are in the eighth seed, you'd both be like, the Lakers could get upset. Why is that? Not just because Nurkic and these guys.
Yeah, we feel that way because things have happened over the last several weeks. People, things have happened over the last several weeks. It's a different season. It's a different season. It's a different season. And by the way, you don't make arguments. You give dissertation.
And Lillard's the man.
Hey, Stephen A.
All I know is this.
Stephen A, I'm just glad that y'all got me on for one segment and you have to deal with Max. You have to deal with Max for the next 2 hours.
Him.
I'm glad, because he's not going to ruin my Monday.
Not easy.
I got him. The beat down is
365 days a year.
Arrived.
All right, guys.
Yeah,
and a stacked Western Conference, Lillard has taken his team to the playoffs every single year besides his rookie year. The man always delivers. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com. Commissioners of the Power Five conferences held an emergency meeting Sunday amid growing concern that the upcoming college football season and other fall sports can't be played because of the coronavirus pandemic, sources told ESPN. Meanwhile, in the NFL, Saints coach Sean Payton, who had the coronavirus, announced last week that he will set up a voluntary bubble for Saints players. Bruce Arians will do the same for the Bucks, as there will be no actual league-wide bubble like the NBA, WNBA, and MLS have created for their players. On that note, we bring in our friend, Super Bowl champ Booger McFarland. Booger, great to have you with us, and we will get to you in just a moment, sir. Stephen A., you're up here first. Should the NFL reconsider having a season?
Absolutely not. They should march full steam ahead because, unlike college football, they have leadership and they have a plan. And somehow, some way, the players stand to benefit. Now, it doesn't come without sacrifice, and we all understand that. But nevertheless, if there's a plan in place and there's economic benefits to reap from it and safety protocols are exhausted and what have you, then you march full steam ahead. Let me get back to college football in a sense. Just for a quick note, guys, let's understand what's transpiring here. Because when you look at college football right now, college football and college basketball, essentially what's going on with college sports is they want to make a concerted effort without saying so. They want to minimize football and basketball to the level of other sports to justify the amateurism tag that they sit up there and attach to these players, to justify, you know, not taking care of them, not compensating them, not necessarily having an association to represent student athletes. And by that, I mean basically basketball and football. The revenue-generating sports deserve representation. The ones who don't generate revenue, be happy with your scholarship. That's basically my position. But getting back to professional football, if you're a professional football, why would you compromise it? This is good news for you. First of all, you've got a situation where I don't understand this voluntary bubble and all of this stuff. And oh, by the way, I will openly admit I am kind of getting tired of hearing folks talk about, excuse me, I'm concerned about my families when they're the athlete. There's a simple solution. Don't go near them. It's a sacrifice that's going to have to be made. Why can I say that with a straight face, with no hesitancy whatsoever? Because that's what we ask the NBA players to do. Where's their families? Where's the wives? Where's the girlfriends? Where's the children at? They ain't in Orlando. They're not in that bubble. They've been asked to come to the bubble and make the necessary sacrifice for the betterment of the league and their own economic future. And they came together with a collective bargaining agreement with Chris Paul, the Players Association, with Michelle Roberts, the executive director of the Players Association. They collaborated with Adam Silver in the league. They reached an accord, and they've exercised that, making no sacrifices. What's wrong with asking the NFL players to do the same thing that you just asked the NBA players to do? You can ask. So I'm not trying to sit there and diminish the importance of safety. Under no circumstances am I doing that. Nor am I saying that you shouldn't care about your family. Of course you care about your family. They take precedent and priority. But there is a way to get around it. And that is, guess what? You get to engage in social distancing and not be in their face for those months, so you can make sure you move on forward and get your money playing this game that you love. It's very simple, and I see the NFL doing exactly that. They're not going to stop. I said it from day one, Max. You know that. The NFL will have a season. And I believe, barring government and medical professional intervention, they will start and they will finish.
They might. Oh, they'll certainly finish if they start, but it ain't going to be by crowning a champion. Check this out. No, the NFL shouldn't cancel their season. I am not sitting here as the adult in the room who's telling everyone to do the right thing morally. No, I'm just as degenerate as all of us. I'd like to see football for selfish reasons, right? I'm a football fan. Okay, so I'm saying, yeah, let's try and play football, everybody. This is not college. It's a different set of circumstances. Stephen, as I think you articulated very well, and I'm with you. I totally co-sign on the look what the NBA players are doing. This is the level of sacrifice it takes if you want a season. But that's the point. They're not going to be able to finish it. I guarantee you they won't finish their season by crowning a champion, given the current circumstances. I'm going to tell the NFL right now how they can do it. And they can either listen to me and maybe still not crown a champion, because this is hard to do when all these people are playing tackle football in the middle of a pandemic when we don't have a vaccination available, right? Maybe it just can't be done. But I'm going to tell you how to give yourselves the best chance. And if someone has something better, please let me know. I will gladly adopt that position. The NFL should come to the players now and say, look, we are never getting through 17 games in the middle of a pandemic, given spread rates and everything. Look what's happening in baseball. It's just not going to happen, guys. Here's what we can do. You're going to have to be, and I brought this up with Marquise Goodwin, and I asked him, would you subscribe to something like this? And he said, well, theoretically, he'd have to talk to his wife, but he didn't dismiss it out of hand. You guys are going to be AFC and NFC bubbles, close to each other. Multiple bubbles for each conference. Say two bubbles for each conference, right? If you need to do more, you do more. No airline travel or anything like that. No interconference games or anything like that. You need a new schedule. 8-week season. You're going to have to be away from your family for 10 weeks or 9 weeks. That's how it's going to be. Then you can go. Then everyone gets tested and everything again. Regroup for the playoffs. Your salaries will be prorated according to an 8-game season. You have to be in the bubble. This is not optional. It's mandatory. If the NFL proposes something like that, they at least have a chance to crown a champion in this upcoming season. I guarantee you if they don't, they simply will not. I don't see how it's possible.
Well, Max, I think it's very possible. And I think Roger Goodell and the 31 owners plus the Packers have shown us one thing from the beginning of this pandemic, that they're going to keep moving forward regardless. And Max, I disagree with you from the standpoint of these two individual bubbles. I don't think they're going to do that. And here's the reason why. The NFL has a players union. These players went to the owners and says, okay, what do we need to come to an agreement with that way we can have a season? You guys are going to be compensated your normal salaries. The owners are going to get their TV money. Yes, we realize we're going to take an economic hit with no fans, but by and large, we will be able to start a season. We will be able to crown a champion down in Tampa where I live. They have a 2 to 3 week window where they can play the Super Bowl in Tampa. That's being talked about down here now. So how are they going to do it? It's really simple, guys. College football has to deal with the one word that the NFL doesn't, and that's amateur. College football players are amateurs. What does that mean? That means, in essence, at the bottom line, somebody has to make a decision for the amateur. You can talk about this hashtag, we want to play movement, we're united. Man, that don't mean anything. You know why? Because the presidents and the ADs are going to make that decision. I don't care how many times Trevor Lawrence tweets it out. I don't care how many times Justin Fields tweets it out. I don't care if Nick Saban tweets it out. At the end of the day, college football is about the liability, and that comes back to the lawyers and the presidents. Notice we're not talking about athletic directors. We're talking about people higher than them, the people that hire the athletic directors, the presidents, because they're the ones that are responsible if and when something catastrophic happens and there is a multi-billion dollar lawsuit. Now, let's bring it back to the NFL. The NFL, we're dealing with professionals, guys. Hey, you sign a contract. I'm paying you, in some cases, $35 million to play. You have a union that's representing you, and that union, we've sat down and we've hashed out every detail. What do you want? What do you need? You want to be tested every day? No problem. You want to be, you want to have a hospital type sanitary environment at your facility? No problem. Whatever you want, whatever you need, we're going to give it to you because you're professional and that has been collectively bargained. And when you walk in that building, okay, now at the NFL, we can say we did everything you wanted. We did everything from a CDC standpoint to make our building safe. So liability, right. The same liability that the college people have, the NFL people have, they shifted that to the players, and the players are willing to take that. And that's why that's the biggest difference between the NFL and college football.
Okay, here's the deal. I totally agree with every word you said, but to hell with college football, okay? I mean, we know that college sports, based on their lack of leadership, they are what they are. Let's get to the NFL, and let's get down to the brass tacks of the situation. Can we stop playing games? Let me say it, because everybody don't want to say it. First of all, have you seen these guys working out and practicing? They look happy to be there because the option is to stay at home because the Rona is out there, and they ain't trying to be stuck home all day, every day, doing nothing. They actually are happy to be out there. Wait, that's number one. We don't want to say it, but I ain't seen anybody out there with a frown on their face, ticked off. Damn, I got to be out on this field. No, they look quite happy. That's number one.
People
number
have been
two,
bored.
Max, I got news for you. I got news for you, Max. Forget the bubble for a second. You know what? I'm going to be even harsher than that with the bubble. Booger, correct me if I'm wrong, but when these guys show up to training camp and stuff like that, they ain't always going home every day. They go to a facility where they're stuck there for weeks upon weeks at a time. How about every team exercise your own bubble? This is our NFL facility. You can't leave. Period. This is what you signed up for. You can't go out there engaging in, you know, like all freelance and everything like they were doing in Major League Baseball until some semblance of a hammer was brought down upon them. Look, this is what we got to do. And as a result, even when you see your family, guess what? Hey, Max, I see a lot of my family members from a distance. I ain't in their face. I'm at least 6 feet apart. I still see them. Now, the wife. Girlfriend, I mean, that's a different ballgame. We understand that. We understand.
I need to be closer than 6 feet to them, Stephen A.
Excuse me. Absolutely. 6 feet ain't gonna work. 6 feet ain't gonna work, brother. But the bottom line is just outside of that, I'm looking right at you. Okay, I see my daughter. I see my son. Oh, I can't give you a hug, but you're right in front of me. We talking. We just can't come.
Sure.
But so close. There is a way to work around this. Especially to make millions. Let's stop it.
Yeah, they need a bubble like in the Simpsons movie. Look, Booger, I don't disagree that the players are willing. That's not the point to me. It's almost like the PED scandal in baseball years ago. Well, but it wasn't illegal in Major League Baseball back then. Yeah, but it was illegal. Like the government said it was illegal. It didn't matter what Major League Baseball said. That analogy holds for me here. I'm sure the players are going to want to play. I'm sure that the owners are going to want to make money. Everyone's going to want to make money. But a pandemic doesn't care. I mean, schools were shut down and everything shut down. Remember originally when things were one-tenth as bad as they are now? And I have seen predictions and models that say it's going to get worse, almost all of them, during flu season, which is coming right up, right in the teeth of the football season. And so at a certain point, it doesn't matter if everyone's willing. They simply may not be able to, maybe not allowed. That's why I'm saying I think that it's not that I've heard also like, oh, you just don't want to see football played. Wrong. I really want to see football played. And I'd like to see themselves give themselves at least a fighting. I'd like to see them give themselves at least a fighting chance. And you can do that, as Dr. Fauci said. He doesn't know how they're going to play it outside of a bubble because it can't happen, really. It's never going to last 17 through a 17-week season. It's just not going to happen. So give yourselves a chance. Cut a deal now, half that number of games.
It ain't gonna happen.
Call
even
it eight
if there's
games,
no season.
10 weeks away from the families. Prorate the salaries and try to get this thing done.
Got over
well,
5
Max,
million
ultimately,
cases
that's
in
not gonna
the,
happen.
In the United States. It's not gonna happen even if there's no season. Go ahead, Booger. I'm sorry.
All right, and ultimately, Max, that's not gonna happen. The NFL had an opportunity to create a bubble. They chose not to. And then, guys, to put this in layman's terms where the viewer can understand, when you have kids, you make decisions for your kids. As someone who's an adult, and we're all adults here, we got to make our own decisions. And that's what the NFL has basically negotiated with the players. We all grown here. We all adults. We all making a lot of money. Y'all want to play? Let's play. And I think that's ultimately why the NFL is going to move. And, Max, they are going to start this season 1 month from today. Okay, mm-hmm. The Texans and the Chiefs play 1 month from today, and they will finish in Tampa. May not be on the exact date the Super Bowl is scheduled for, but they will finish because you have grown adult men who accept
50,
the
50
risk
to even play
and the liability
game
for whatever happens.
All right, 50, let's keep 50, it real.
They
everybody
play week one,
has a
0%
price.
Chance to crown a champion.
All right, we shall see. Nobody wants football more than us. We're on a sports debate show 5 days a week.